And what is being used now is a very sophisticated digital editor, which I know that is still relatively new to you here at WILL, and was putting this production together sort of a way for you to learn that better, or did you already know how to do everything you needed to do this show?
Well, that's a good question. I did learn, of course. Yeah, this has been quite a learning experience. I've only dabbled in what you might call radio theater before. We used to produce our own little short sketches here at WILL years ago. And those, yeah, back during the old technology, everything was direct to tape. And that gave you very limited capability as far as mixing or editing and so on. So this was a learning experience. Yeah, the technology we use now is much more powerful than what we used to have in the old days. But then, of course, with that comes quite a learning curve. And I picked up a couple of new tricks along the way on this one for sure. Yeah.
So I know you sat down with Nick Schneider a number of times. So you knew from him what effects he wanted added, you know, that would have been in the live performance. And then because he's had his own background in radio and TV, he was relatively picky, as I know you are, when you do this kind of work. What were the sort of things that you and he were listening for to make sure that you got it to sound just the way you wanted?
A lot of that was in the, oh, what would you call them? The enhancements, scene setting, mood setting, incidental music that might come along during the performance. On TV and movie, most people don't even – you don't think about it. That music just comes in with the scene. It adds impact or effect to the scene. And so we really had to think how we were going to work that in. It is used during the live production, and it sounds different when you mix it in the computer. It does change the sound of it somewhat because you don't have the big room that it's, you know, echoing around in. And so that required a lot of attention and I'll say many retakes on my part to get it just right.
And then, of course, then there's the ghosts who you need to make sound ghostly, which,
right.
You know, you would have effects that they planned and in the theater. But in, as we said earlier, you recorded everybody live just doing their thing, and you had to make the ghosts sound ghostly later.
Right. That was difficult to do. I think, you know, if we try something this like this again, I might approach that a little bit differently to give me more control over voices such as ghosts. But in this case, when it was already done, the entire production had been recorded, it made it a little bit challenging to go back and just affect the ghost voices only. But it had to be done, and I kind of wish we had a better selection of such effects here, but we have what we have. There may be something to plan for in the future. If we do something like this again, we might see that we're better prepared for ghost voices, but I don't think it turned out too bad. I just kind of made them sound as ghostly as I could with the tools that we have.
And this was something that came up to WILL, one of our producers for the afternoon magazine on the AM 580, Harriet Williamson. This was really her brainchild, was to do this project and to try to get Parkland's Christmas Carol onto the radio. And we had various options that we might have done, and we chose what we did. But as you said to me numerous times, we really didn't know what we were getting into to do it in a relatively short period of time.
Radio theater is very complicated. Yes. In days past when we attempted this here, everything was kind of done live on the spot. I would have a stack of tapes, and I would trigger those tapes on cue as we went through the script. And if you didn't get it just right, you went back and you did the scene, I guess, if you want to call it that. And none of our things are really plays, but you would do that scene again until you got it right. Well, couldn't do that this time.
We did it once through.
And everything had to be done after the fact. And yeah, that did make things challenging. So if we would try and do something like this again, well, there's a lesson I learned. I would approach it a little differently.
Well, you know, people have called me as the host, the voice of Live and Local, and I guess that's true to a point. But you are, Mike Pritchard, the unseen but very much heard voice of Live and Local. You make us sound as we do, and particularly you make the music sound as it does. And in the case of A Christmas Carol, it sounds the way it does because of the work you've done, and I just wanted to make sure our listeners knew that there was somebody in the background, like the Wizard of Oz, pulling all the levers.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate that. It's been the experience working with you on Live and Local has just been extremely exciting. I don't know what we're going to get from one day to the next. It's sometimes, well, I won't say always a surprise because it's not. You do a good job of preparing me, so I know the instrumentation coming in. We've both been surprised a few times along the way. But it's a lot of fun. I enjoy the challenge. And when it's all said and done, I like to listen back to the program that we just did, and it's always very satisfying.
That was Mike Pritchard, technical director and recording engineer for Live and Local and for this radio adaptation of A Christmas Carol. We now continue with Act Two of the Bah Humbug Productions and Parkland Theater version of Dickens' classic here on AM 580 and FM 90.9.
Well, seems that my uncle got a bit more than expected upon his visit to the past. It strikes me that the past can be wondrous and joyful, or mundane and heartrending. I guess it all depends upon how you remember it. And then there's the present. Not the present that you see or experience, but the one you miss because you're not looking in the right place. Uncle Scrooge now had no choice but to look into a place where he had seldom been. And so he opened the door to the parlor.
Ebenezer, please, come in. Come in and know me, better man.
Yes, and you are the ghost of...
I am the ghost of Christmas Present! Look upon me. Have you never seen the likes of me before?
Never.
So, you have never seen or walked with the younger members of my family. I mean, of course, my elder siblings before me.
Your family? No, I don't think I have. I'm afraid I have not. Do you have many siblings, Spirit?
More than 1,800.
A tremendous family to provide for. Spirit, take me where you will. Last night I traveled on compulsion, but learned a lot. Tonight, if you have anything at all to teach me, let me profit by it.
Take my robe, and we'll be off.
The holly and the ivy, when they are both full grown, of all the trees that are in the wood, the holly bears the crown.
The rising of the sun,
and the deer, the playing of the merry organ, sweet singing in the choir. Bum 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 bum.
Now, Elizabeth, it's time we finished all this up. I'm tired of you fiddle-faddling around half the day long.
You see here, dear husband of mine, just because you'd rather be at your pub quaffing a pint of ale with friends instead of me on this fine holiday is no reason to be short with me.
Sure, and I'll remind you that the wife's duty is to her husband's wishes, and... and your wishes are my wishes. So where do you want to go next, dear lady?
Oh, darling Amos, you're so kind to me.
Scrooge stared in amazement as the couple went on their way. What was it that the ghost of Christmas Present had sprinkled on them? What manner of substance from the ghost's torch changed the attitude of an otherwise angry couple? He had little time to think as the pair of somewhat inebriated gentlemen collided in front of him.
And where did you think you were going in such a hurry, Mr. Nobody?
Never mind to you. I go where I go and you're in the way.
And who are you to say which way is my way and whose path you are?
Well, I'll tell you whose path you're in, by God. And if you don't get out of the way and get going about your own business,
you're welcome to take any path you like.
We just wasn't looking to which way we was going, that's all.
Yeah, it's Christmas Day and all, and we were looking everywhere but straight ahead. And nay, on such a holy day, not a quarrel should there be. Merry Christmas to you.
Nor any other. And a Merry Christmas to you. And a Happy New Year while you're at it.
Spirit, is there a peculiar flavor in what you sprinkle from your torch?
There is, my own.
Would it apply to any on this day?
To any kindly given, to a poor one most.
Why a poor one most?
Because it needs it most.
Oh.
With that, the ghost arose once again, and Scrooge, hanging on to its robe, flew with the spirit into a modest four-room dwelling in the Camden Town section of the metropolis.
Gently blow and stir the fire, lay the mutton down to roast. Dress it quickly, I desire, in the drippings put a toast, that I hunger may remove. Mutton goose is a meat I love.
I am beginning to wonder what is keeping your father and Tiny Tim. And Martha wasn't this late last Christmas Day. Here's Martha, Mother.
Why, bless your heart alive, my dear, how late you are.
We'd a deal of work to finish up last night, Mother, and had to clear away this morning.
Well, never mind, so long as you are here. Sit down before the fire, my dear, and get warm. Lord bless you.
No, no, there's Father coming.
Hi, Mother, hide!
Why, where's our Martha?
Not coming.
Not coming? Not coming upon Christmas Day?
Oh, Father, you know I would never miss Christmas Day with you, Mother, and our family.
Father and I had a wondrous walk home, met lots of people, and even looked in a couple of shops before stopping at the church. And, Mother, here's a sprig of holly, Father, bought you to bring us good fortune.
Spirit, I am dismayed. Somehow I forgot about all of these children of my clock.
Somehow it seems many of you mortals forget about your children. You revel in their company, but still you forget, even at Christmas, a time of the joy of birth, a time so many of you reserve for children, so many of you replace them with the tinsel of coins you fling from your purses.
But, oh, spirits, just that I who have never married, I have never had children around me, except perhaps my nephew Fred, so it's just that I'm not around children.
Children are always around you, around all of humanity. Children are like stars on a clear night, speaking to you with each twinkle of light, and hoping you read their message of the future, but you don't. And so many of them, so many dreams, so many stars fade out as a cold, dark wind, because you have forgotten.
I shall try not to forget, and not forget my good clock's children in the least.
Sing we now,
Spirit, tell me Tiny Tim will live.
I see a vacant seat in the corner, and a crutch without an owner, carefully preserved. If these shadows remain unaltered by the future, the child will die.
Oh, no, 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 kind spirit. Say he will be spared.
If these shadows remain unaltered, none other of my family will find him here. What then? If he should die, he had better do it and decrease the surplus population. Will you decide what men shall live, what men shall die? It may be that in the sight of heaven, you are more worthless and less fit to live than millions like this poor child.
Singing voices rising in the air, on the corner huddled together, sing for all to hear. Call out to the world, follow the star, follow the light that led them from afar. Call out to the boy lost in the snow. Follow the bright and wondrous glow. Follow the bright and wondrous glow.
How wonderful this family. May God bless us.
Yes, God bless us.
Yes, God bless us, everyone.
Mr. Scrooge, I give you Mr. Scrooge, the founder of the feast.
Founder of the feast, indeed. I wish I had him here. I'd give him a piece of my mind.
My dear, the children, Christmas Day.
It should be Christmas Day, I am sure, on which one toasts the health of such an odious, stingy, hard, unfeeling man as Mr. Scrooge. You know he is, Robert. Nobody knows it better than you do.
My dear, it's Christmas Day.
I'll drink to his health for your sake in Christmas Day, but not for his.
Long life to him. A Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. He'll be very merry and very happy, I have no doubt.
Merry Christmas to all!
Merry Christmas.
Good King Wenceslas looked out on the feast of Stephen, when the snow lay all about, deep and crisp and even. Brightly shone the moon that night, though the frost was cruel. When a poor man came and sat all about, deep and crisp and even. Brightly shone the moon that night, though the frost was cruel. When a poor man came in sight, gathering winter fuel.
With this, Scrooge latched onto the ghost robe once again, and they were off. This time to a house of higher stature with gleaming rooms, one of which was brightly decorated for the season and filled with joyous laughter.
Who's that? I know that laugh.
Father, you're so funny. Please tell that story again.
Well, children, I think you've had quite a day, so no more stories, and off to bed with you.
Good night.
Merry Christmas, everyone.
Good night.
So tell us, dear friend, how is that cranky old uncle of yours?
Cranky? That's not the half of it. Oh, my uncle believes that Christmas is a humbug, and as I live, he said so straight out.
For shame, and for such a righteous man at that.
Well, he is a comical old fellow, and not so pleasant as he might be. However, his offenses carry their own punishment, and I have nothing to say against him.
Nothing to say except that he's very rich, Fred.
Well, what of that, my dear? His wealth is of no use to him.
And I have no patience with him.
Oh, I have. I'm sorry for him. I couldn't be angry with him if I tried. Who suffers by his ill whims, hm? Well, himself, always. Here, he takes it into his head to dislike us, and he won't come and dine with us. What's the consequence?
Well, I think he loses a very good dinner.
Yes. Well, I'm very glad to hear it, because I haven't great faith in these young housekeepers. What do you say, Topper?
My dear Fred, it's hardly for me to say. As a bachelor and a wretched outcast amongst you marrieds, I don't think I should express an opinion on the topic, especially with such a Charlotte nearby.
Do go on, Fred. He never finishes what he begins to say. Such a ridiculous fellow.
I was only going to say that the consequence of his taking a dislike to us and not making merry with us is, as I see it, that he loses some pleasant moments, which can do him no harm. Oh, he may rail on Christmas till he dies, but he can't help thinking better of it. I defy him if he finds me going there in good temper year after year, saying, Uncle Scrooge, how are you? Yeah, I think I shook him yesterday.
Well, Fred, I think it's time for some entertainment.
Maybe Charlotte would be so kind as to play a song or two.
Oh, I'd rather play a game.
Ooh.
How about the song that is a game? The yes and no game!
Everyone line up in front.
Lead off, Fred. Whose shoe should we pass?
Fred's lead, so it should be Fred's shoe we should use.
All right, everyone. Charlotte, start us off.
Spirit, may we not stay a while longer to watch the game?
I think not, Ebenezer. My time grows short. We should move on.
A few minutes. Just a few minutes
oh,
more.
Oh, tell me what I'm thinking. No, please, oh, do. Oh, tell me what I'm thinking. Can you, or you, or you?
There is a little something, and it lives in London town. It snarls and it growls as it strolls up and down.
Oh, tell me what I'm thinking, oh please, oh do. Oh, tell me what I'm thinking, can you, or you, or you?
A savage dog?
Good guess, but wrong. It is not led by anyone or tethered to a yoke. It's sometimes very funny, but it's not a joke.
Oh, tell me what I'm thinking, oh please, oh do. Oh, tell me what I'm thinking, can you, or you, or you?
Oh, the bishop? Oh, good Lord.
No, Will, no. It always goes to market, and it fetches quite a price. But no one really wants it, for it's not very nice.
Oh, tell me what I'm thinking, oh please, oh do. Oh, tell me what I'm thinking, can you, or you, or you?
A bull?
No.
A bear?
Oh, darling,
No! Sorry.
It never goes to parties, and each ball it always misses. It is so very mean that it would not spend Christmas.
Oh, tell me what I'm thinking. Oh, please, oh, do. Oh, tell me what I'm thinking. Can you or you or you?
Now, when did you two sneak back in? You were to be in bed, both of you. So back to bed, right this minute.
Oh, come on, Fred. Let them say it.
All right, then. What is it?
It's Uncle Scrooge!
Yes! Wonderful guess.
Hooray for them.
All right, well, it's true. And since my uncle has given us plenty of merriment, it would be ungrateful not to drink his health. So let's, with the glass of mulled wine ready to our hand, raise to him a toast. I say, here's to Uncle Scrooge.
Well, Uncle Scrooge.
A Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year to the old man, whatever and wherever he is. He wouldn't take it from me, but may he have it nevertheless. Uncle Scrooge.
Uncle Scrooge!
As the party toasted the old man, the room seemed to disappear before Scrooge's eyes, and Scrooge lost, at least for a moment or two, the ghost who had moved away. When he spied him again, he realized that they were no longer in his nephew's house, but somewhere else. More importantly, it seemed to Scrooge that the spirit had changed in some way.
Spirit, you seem anxious and tired and older. Are spirits' lives so short?
My life on this globe is very brief. It ends tonight.
Tonight?
Tonight at midnight. Hark, the time is drawing near.
Forgive me if I'm not justified in what I ask, but I see something strange beneath your robe. Is it a foot or a claw?
It might be a claw, for the flesh there is upon it! Look! Oh, man, look! Look down here!
Whereby the ghost opened his robe to reveal a boy and a girl, or at least that's what they seemed to be. Yellow, meager, ragged, scowling, wolfish, but prostrate too in their humility as they clutched at the spirit. Where angels might have sat enthroned, devils lurked and glared out, menacing.
Spirit, are they yours?
They are man's, and they cling to me, appealing from their fathers. This boy is ignorance, and this girl is want. Beware them both, but most of all beware the boy, for on his brow I see doom is written, and so it will be unless the writing be erased. Deny it, and abide the end.
So have they no refuge or resource?
Are there no prisons? Are there no workhouses?
Are there no prisons?
Are there no prisons?
Are there no workhouses?
Are there no prisons?
Are there no workhouses?
Are there no workhouses?
Well now, midnight again, and it seems as if my uncle has talked his way into a pickle, as it were, left out in the cold, damp air of a London winter, in a place unknown to him. Haunted by the past, abandoned by the present, he is left only steps from the future, a future of his own making. And there, without stutter, step, or sound, a figure of height, black in robe and red in eye, stands as a shadow before Ebenezer Scrooge.
And you are the ghost of Christmas yet to come, of a Christmas future?
The spirit is silent. It answers not to Scrooge's question. Whether it can speak is unknown, but it needs not a voice, for its mysterious presence filled Scrooge with a solemn dread. This phantom neither spoke nor moved.
You are about to show me shadows of the things that have not happened, but will happen in the time before us. Is that so, spirit? Ghost of the future, I fear you more than any specter I have seen, but I know your purpose is to do me good. Will you not speak to me? Lead on. The night is waning fast, and it is precious time to me, I know. Lead on, spirit.
The phantom moved away as it had come towards him. Scrooge followed in the shadow of its dress, which bore him up, he thought, and carried him along. And then, as if springing up around him, was the familiar room in a familiar four-room cottage in Camden Town.
He took a child and set him in the midst of them, and he said, I say unto you, unless you change and become like this child, you will never enter the kingdom of heaven. Whoever humbles himself like this child is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven.
The color hurts my eyes. They're better now. Candlelight makes them weak, and I wouldn't show weak eyes to your father when he comes home.
He's a bit late tonight, but I think he's walked a little slower than usual these last few evenings, Mother.
I've known him to walk with Tiny Tim upon his shoulder very fast indeed.
And so have I, often.
And so have I. Tim was very light to carry, and your father loved him so that it was no trouble. No trouble at all. Oh, and there is your father at the door.
Don't mind it, Father. Father, don't be grieved.
Oh, no, my children. I'm not so grieved. And look at this. You ladies have completed such wonderful things. Goodness knows you'll be finished with it long before dawn breaks next Sunday.
Sunday? So you went today then, Robert?
Yes, my dear. I wish you could have gone. It would have done you good to see how green a place it is. But you'll see it often. I have promised him we would walk there each Sunday. Oh, my little child. My little son.
Oh, Father, we all knew the end for our beloved brother was near. Be strong for all of us.
Your father is strong, my dear, and he loves us all just as dearly. We will all miss our Tim.
I am sure none of us will soon forget poor Tiny Tim, this first parting among us.
Never.
And I know that when we remember how patient and how mild he was, we shall not quarrel among ourselves so easily and dishonor poor Tiny Tim's memory in doing so.
No, Father.
Then I am very happy. I am so very happy with you all.
No, not Tim. Not dear little Tiny Tim. It should not be. Oh, please, dear spirit, comforting spirit, let me see some tenderness connected with death, or dark memories will forever be present to me.
The room seems to dissolve in shadows. Black on black immerse Scrooge as the ghost's spindly finger of the future points into the center of an otherwise empty and black hole that begins to fill with nightmarish caricatures from his life.
Ah, look out! What chance, Mrs. Dilber? We made here without planning it.
Well, my friends, there's not a better place. Welcome to my parlor.
Have we not got business, Mrs. Smythe? Take a look at our bundles, old Joe, so as we can finish it off.
Who's the worst for the loss of a few things?
Not a dead man!
When did he die?
Last night, I believe.
What has he done with his money?
God only knows.
And it's likely to be a very cheap funeral. Because, for upon my life, I don't know of anybody to go to it.
And suppose we make up a party and volunteer.
I won't mind going if a lunch is provided, but I must be fed.
Getting him ready for the earth was much easier than usual. Not a lot of blood in the old man, you know. And not too much more on his person to remove.
Well, if he wanted to keep his things after he was dead, he'd have had somebody to look after him when he was struck with death, instead of lying, gasping out his last breath alone by himself.
'Tis the truest word ever was spoke. It's a judgment on him.
I wish it was a little heavier judgment. And it should have been if I could have laid my hands on anything else.
Might we save the tattered ladies and get on with it?
What you think, Joe? Pretty good gob of stuff, eh? Worth a few bob or more even?
I'll tell you what it's worth. A crown and a half and not a penny more. I always give too much to the ladies. It's a weakness of mine. If you ask me for even another farthing, I'll repent of being so liberal and knock off half a crown.
How are you?
Good, to be sure, and you?
Quite well, thank you. So, old Scratch has got his own at last, eh?
So I'm told. A gift to the neighborhood from Father the Christmas, I'm sure. Cold, isn't it?
Seasonable for Christmas time. You're not a skater, I suppose.
Oh, no. Something else to think of. Shall we be off to the pub for a pint?
If there is any person in the town who shows emotion caused by this man's death, show that person to me, Spirit. Please, I beseech you.
You seem distracted today, Belle. Something must be bothering you.
Well, I just heard that a man I knew years ago passed away, and I've been thinking about him.
He must have been much more than just a passing acquaintance for you to be in such a state.
That he was. I just hope that he found his happiness in the life he chose.
Come on, Grandma. We still need some more decorations.
Now my bandle, Joe.
What? Bed curtains? You don't mean to say you took them down, rings and all, with him lying there.
Yes, I do. Why not? I certainly shan't hold my hand. Well, I could get anything in it by reaching it out.
I hope he didn't die of anything catching it.
Don't you be afraid of that. I'm so fond of his company that I'd loiter about him for such things. You may look through that shirt till your eyes ache. You won't find a hole in it, nor a threadbare place. It's the best he had, and a fine one, too. They'd have wasted it if it hadn't been for me.
Wasted it?
Putting it on him to be buried in. Well, somebody was fool enough to do it, but I took it off him again, eh?
This is the end of it, you see.
He frightened everyone away from him when he was alive to profit us when he was dead.
I see. Oh, caring spirit, the case of this unhappy and dour man might be my own. A merciful heaven, take me away from these places of darkness.
The blackness spins around Scrooge. Up is down. Down is up. Flash of light here. Flash of light there. A gravestone here. A gravestone there. 100 gravestones, and yet one gravestone keeps moving forward toward him with each pointed gesture by the ghost.
Let us go. A spectre of time to come. Who was the man they spoke about? The choices men make lead to certain ends, I know, but if they change, if I change completely, might not the ending of my life be different? Oh, this is a fearful place, spirit. Take me back, I beg you. Take me back to my home. Oh, spirit, speak to me. Hold back nothing. Are these shadows of the things that will be? Or are they shadows of things that may be? Oh, am I that man? Am I the man who is no more useful as goods? Am I the man beneath this earth? Oh, no, spirit, not I. Oh, kind spirit, benevolent spirit, hear me. I am not the man I was. Why show me this in my apostle home? I can be different. I will be different. I am different.
With this, Scrooge reached out to clutch the spirit's robe, but there was nothing. Nothing that he could hold in his grasp. The arm and the hand of the ghost reached out once again, pointing at the tombstone bearing the name of Ebenezer Scrooge. Scrooge reached for the hand as it began to tremble. Unable to encompass the ghost, Scrooge's arm fell upon the stone as he pleaded with the spirit.
Oh, good spirit, tell me that I may change these shadows you have shown me. On my oath, I will honor Christmas in my heart and try to keep it all the year. The spirits of past, present, and future shall all strive within me. I will not shut out the lessons that they teach. Oh, dear spirit, kind spirit, tell me I may sponge away the writing on this stone.
The world began to whirl around Scrooge, and night became day, became night again, all in an instant. And holding up his hand in the last prayer to have his fate reversed, he saw an alteration in the phantom's hood and dress. It shrunk, collapsed, and dwindled down into the bedpost he found himself clutching.
Ah, I'm here! I'm home! Oh, goodness save me! Oh, Jacob Marley, heaven in the Christmas time, be praised for this!
They're all here. The curtains. The rings, they're not torn down, and I'm all here. There's the saucepan that the gruel was in. There's the door where the ghost of Jacob Marley entered. There's where the ghost of Christmas present sat. But it's all true. It all happened. I'm light as a feather, happy as an angel, merry as a schoolboy. Merry Christmas to everybody. Happy New Year to the world. Oh, good heavens. I don't know how long I've been among spirits. I don't know anything.
I'm quite the baby. Oh, never mind. I don't care. I'd rather be a baby.
Young man, what's today? What's today, my fine fellow?
Today? Why, it's Christmas Day.
Oh, Christmas Day. I haven't missed it. The spirits have done it all in one night. Oh, they can do anything they like. Of course they can. Of course they can. The spirits. Oh, hello, my fine fellow.
Hello.
Do you know the poulterers on the next street, the one at the corner?
I should hope I did.
Oh, an intelligent boy, a remarkable boy. Do you know whether they've sold the prize turkey that was hanging up there? Not the little prize turkey, but the big one.
What, the one's been me?
Oh, what a delightful boy. It's a pleasure to talk to him. Oh, yes, my buck.
It's hanging there now.
It is. Well, go and buy it.
Would you be daft, sir?
Oh, no, no, no. I'm in earnest. Go and buy it and tell the poulterer to deliver to the Cratchits in Camden Town and send the bill to me, Ebenezer Scrooge. I'll have your pay waiting for you and a half a crown upon its delivery. Oh, goodness, goodness, Christmas Day is here. I'm here. We're all here. Everyone's here. Can you hear the sleigh bells a-jingling? Can you hear the piper play? The world's alive with music. Today is Christmas Day. Look out for Father Christmas. What's this on the hearth? It looks like a present. My goodness, it is a present. It must be for me. Nobody else lives here.
Indeed, a beautifully wrapped gift box sat poised on the hearth, and Ebenezer Scrooge gently picked it up, as though it contained fine crystal, or precious gems, or, perhaps, life itself. And as Scrooge unwrapped it carefully, almost reverently, his face lit up even more. He reached into the vessel and began to extract, inch by well-knitted inch, a beautiful, colorful, wonderful scarf that he began to wrap around his neck and body, immersing himself in emotions he had not felt for years.
Oh, happy, happy Christmastide! Goodbye, chains! Look out for Father Christmas. I'm merrily on my way. Can you hear the sleigh bells a-jingling? Can you hear the spiders play? The world's alive with music. Today is Christmas Day.
I missed her! Oh, a sprig of holly for the missus. Keep safe the tiny spirits of the wood, you know. Keep your sanity, too.
How's that?
Well, that old miser Ebenezer Scrooge turned me away yesterday, and this morning I see him jumping up and down, dancing round a lamp and being overall nutty, if you know what I mean.
But, oh, hello there, Mr. Bostwick, Mr. Coatsworth. Oh, good to see you today. I hope you succeeded in your solicitations yesterday. It was very kind of you. A Merry Christmas to you both. I fear I have been less than pleasant to you in the past, so allow me to ask your pardon. And will you have the goodness to accept £100 for your charitable use?
Lord bless me, my dear Mr. Scrooge, are you serious?
Well, if you please, not a farthing less. A great many back payments are included in it, I assure you. Will you do me that favor?
Oh, my dear sir, I don't know what to say to such munificence.
Well, don't say anything, please. Come and see me. Will you please come and see me?
I will.
Of course we will.
Oh, thank you. I'm much obliged to you. I thank you 50 times. Bless you, bless you.
King Wenceslas looked out on the feast of Stephen, when the snow lay all about, deep and crisp and even. Brightly shone the moon that night, though the frost was cruel.
When a poor man came in sight,
gathering winter's fuel.
Yes. Mr. Scrooge, the turkey was delivered as ordered.
Hooray, a Merry Christmas. Merry Christmas to you, you fine gentlemen. You very fine gentlemen. And here, allow me to pay you for the bird. Oh, and here, this is for you. And this is for your family. Oh, happy day.
Well, thank you. Thank you, kind sir. Thank you generously, Mr. Scrooge, sir.
Oh, yes. Oh, and here, my fine young fellow. Is that half a crown I promised and more? Oh, Merry Christmas to you.
As the street filled with people coming and going to church services and like, the family Cratchit is noticed by friends and greeted.
Merry Christmas, Abigail.
And Scrooge also notices. He quickly hides his new wrap beneath his coat, puts on his sternest, and I might add, expected face, and approaches the Cratchit family.
Well, Bob Cratchit, I see you and your family are making merry and taking full advantage of a day I'm paying for but not getting any benefit.
Oh, but of course, Mr. Scrooge. Why, thank you, Mr. Scrooge.
Oh, yes, Mr. Scrooge. We were only just talking about you.
Now, talking about me, well, let me tell you something, Bob Cratchit. I am going to raise your salary. A Merry Christmas, Bob. A Merry Christmas, my good fellow, than I have given you in many a year. I'll raise your salary and endeavor to assist your struggling family. And we can discuss your affairs this very afternoon over a Christmas bowl of smoking bishop. Merry Christmas, everyone. Oh, Merry Christmas. Oh, and especially to you, dear Tiny Tim. Oh, and Bob, here. Buy another coal scuttle on your way to the office tomorrow.
Thank you, Mr. Scrooge.
Hey, Mr. Scrooge. How about a sprig of Ollie to take to the Mrs. Thrust to keep your place at top of the household for the coming year? Or to keep away any little goblins? Or to shelter
the poor, tiny spirit of the wood? I'll take the lot if you don't mind. Happy New Year!
Why, bless my soul, Uncle Scrooge.
Oh, Fred, Nelly and the little ones. Oh, joy this day.
My dear uncle, what are you doing over here on Christmas morning? And what are you doing with all of that holly and that scarf?
Well, I think it's time for me to close the book and reach outside my ledgers to the place where you and Nellie and the children, my family, live. I need to look over my life's entries, as I may have omitted a few items. So if I may ask, would you still have room for me at dinner?
Room for you? Why, my dear uncle, it would be our joy to have you join us.
Well, folks, Uncle Scrooge was better than his word. He did it all and infinitely more. And to Tiny Tim, who did not die, he was a second father. He became as good a friend, as good a master, as good a man as the good old city knew, or any other good old city, town, or borough in the good old world. Some people laughed to see the alteration in him, but he let them laugh and little heeded them. For you see, my uncle was wise enough to know that nothing ever happens on earth for good at which some people do not have their fill of laughter, thinking it all a horrendous joke. For his own heart laughed, and that was quite enough for him. It was more than enough for me. My uncle had no further contact with spirits and lived in joy ever afterwards. And it was always said of him that he knew how to keep Christmas well, if any man alive possessed that knowledge. May that be truly said of us and all of you. The voices for this special radio production of A Christmas Carol included
Dominique Allen as the Ghost of Christmas Past,
Kelly Barber Connerty as Charlotte, Mrs. Smythe, and Mrs. Abigail Cratchit,
Sydney Brown as Martha Cratchit and Fan,
Ian Carpenter as one of Fred's children and the messenger boy,
Trinity Carpenter as Tiny Tim,
Ariella Cohen as the Ollie Girl,
Quentin Crook as Young Scrooge and Peter,
Mike Hershey as Topper,
Keith Hayes as Ebenezer's father and Al Jow,
Dustin Judd as Mr. Gadbury and Amos,
Casey Long as Mr. Bostwick and the Ghost of Christmas Present,
Lauren Longfellow as Belle, Catherine Tugwell, and Belinda Cratchit,
Lily Macklin as Nellie,
Rachel McGrath as Beatrice and Elizabeth,
Brad Mertens as Fred Tugwell,
Charles Merrickey as Mr. Coatsworth and Dick Wilkins,
Timothy O'Neill as Bob Cratchit, Teenage Scrooge, and Will,
Joe Porter as the Ghost of Jacob Marley,
Diane Pritchard as Mrs. Fezziwig and Belle's friend,
Amy Randall as Sarah,
Angela Schneider as Mrs. Dilber and older Belle,
David Young as Mr. Kirchner and Reveler number 2,
Nick Schneider as Scrooge, This radio version of the Parkland College Theater and Bah Humbug Productions stage presentation of A Christmas Carol was written and directed by Nick Schneider, especially for WILL-FM. Original music was composed by Tim Shermer, with lyrics by Seamus Riley and Sherry Coombs. Sound design by John Shanoff. A Christmas Carol is presented annually at Parkland College Theater during the weekends preceding the Christmas holiday. Please join us next year. You may visit us on the internet at www.bahhumbug.biz or www.parkland.edu/theater. Recording engineer and technical director for WILL has been Mike Pritchard. Produced for WILL by Harriet Williamson.
The preceding special radio broadcast of A Christmas Carol, as produced by Bah Humbug Productions and Parkland College Theater, is presented with permission of the authors. Any subsequent use or rebroadcast without the author's permission is strictly prohibited.
I'm Kevin Kelly for WILL AM and FM, hoping you enjoyed Bah Humbug Productions and Parkland Theater's adaptation of Charles Dickens' A Christmas Carol. As a postscript, I had a conversation with writer and producer Nick Schneider about the process of creating this special radio version of their stage creation, essentially an adaptation of an adaptation.
Right. Kevin, what we had to do is, this came up rather suddenly, as you may know, but it was a great idea to give an opportunity for folks to listen to this on the radio who might not be able to have attended the theatrical production. And the difference is, however, you cannot just record the theatrical production and present it on the radio. Because of the obvious, you can't see some things on the radio unless we tell you what's happening. So one of the things that I had to attack first was which of these visuals needed to be presented audibly to the audience by direct exposition or by a voice saying, here's what's happening. So the first thing to do was to go through the script and find those areas and then create the language, the dialogue, the voice in order to describe to the listening audience what they were missing visually.
And you assigned that text to the narrators who you already had in the show.
Well, right, to the actors we already had. Everybody took a voice. I did do one thing. I wanted everybody who participated in the radio recording to become a voice, and that's what they did. So almost every voice is a different actor who has been portraying some character or several characters in the actual recording itself.
Well, and the other interesting thing for the characters is that you didn't have the full cast from the stage production in the studio, and so some of them had to take on roles that they didn't actually play on stage.
Exactly. They had to take on a persona, a character that they were not used to portraying, and had to read it basically right out of the script and come up with that character. And we didn't do a lot of rehearsal. In fact, we did no rehearsal. We basically just went on and read it.
But enough, I mean, most of it was the same.
Oh, yes. The key characters, for example, Brad Mertens plays the role of Fred, took that role on. And in the radio recording, he also did the reading of Fezziwig, which he has done for the preceding 2 years.
But not this year.
But not this year, right.
So and you've got quite an adaptable cast anyway. I mean, so many of the actors in your production have been in many other productions of other things at Parkland or elsewhere.
Oh, that's true. Very few that we had in the broadcast studio for the recording had never been there or had never done something else. So at least we had, you know, the core of who we brought over to WILL were folks that have done acting before, maybe not in a studio as a radio show, which was different for some of them, but also provided an experience for them. And so perhaps next year if we do this again, we'll have a little bit more of an experienced crew.
So what kind of comments did you get from the actors after this experience? I mean, I'm thinking particularly how they might have felt differently having no visible audience.
Well, I think it was more a case of where they were in space on the stage relative to where they were in the studio. I tried to get them, for example, to move around, because on FM we have essentially stereo broadcast. And the engineer, Mike Pritchard, had set up an array of microphones to accomplish us kind of capturing the sense of that movement from stage right to stage left. But they found it very difficult to achieve that because it was a smaller space.
Well, they've only got about 6 feet to move around in there.
Yeah, right.
And our listening audience on our AM station will not hear that same effect.
They will not get that effect, no. But that was one of the challenges we had to try to get there and getting them to move in and out. But they did quite well.
You're not without experience in radio and TV yourself.
No, actually, I have much more experience in radio and television and film than I do on the stage. My first career, which is a little over 20 years long, was in mostly film and television, doing national kinds of things, working on major television series shows and so forth. So, yeah, I've got a lot of experience in that neck of the woods.
So what kind of major televisions?
Well, in those days, I worked on, for a major portion of that time, I worked for an advertising agency out of Detroit, which handled accounts such as General Motors and Chevrolet and Firestone and Admiral Television and so forth. And in those days of television, the sponsors owned the rights to a particular show. So when we worked, Chevrolet sponsored Bonanza, for example. And so we worked with all of the actors that participated in the filming of Bonanza. Many times we actually reviewed the show before it went on the air. We had right of refusal. So folks like me would watch the show and make any notes and tell the client whether we thought it was appropriate for their business. So we had that. It was a lot of fun. Route 66 and My Three Sons and so forth. It was just a good time.
But you weren't in a position to ask Hoss and Little Joe to change their lines.
Oh, no. We did none of that. That was not the issue. The issue was just were the lines appropriate for the audience that was viewing.
So did doing this adaptation take you back a bit?
Well, it always does. I started out in radio at the University of Detroit, WTVS, at the radio station, and I used to do a couple of programs. I did some radio drama while I was there. And this was a period of time, towards the end of my tenure there at any rate, when we were into the centennial of the Civil War. So I wrote a series of short radio programs that were done in a dramatic fashion about various battles or various situations that occurred in Civil War time. Later, for NBC, I wrote a television adaptation of a short story for Christmas called No Tears from Christmas, written originally by Helen Topping Miller. That was done as a on-camera drama, and so this is kind of in the same venue.
Did you find that your own portrayal of Scrooge changed any between the stage version and the radio version?
Well, I don't know. I just listened to myself as we did some editing and some incorporating sound. You know, I still think I sound like I'm 25 years old, so it's hard for me to visualize the fact that I'm playing this guy that's old. But if you see me in person, it helps a lot.
Well, the wig helps too.
Yes, it does.
Nick Schneider is writer and producer of Parkland Theater's adaptation of A Christmas Carol. Tim Shermer wrote the music. Seamus Riley and Sherry Coons wrote the lyrics. Mike Pritchard was sound engineer and technical director, and Harriet Williamson produced this program. I'm Kevin Kelly, host of Live and Local. On behalf of all of us at WYLL AM and FM, I wish you a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. And thanks for listening.
Support for today's programs comes from the Corkscrew Wine Emporium, 203 North Vine, Urbana, with wines, beers, and spirits for the serious collector to the first-time buyer. Wine tastings are held every Saturday from 2 to 6. Information is available at 337-7704 or at thecorkscrew.com.
This is Illinois Public Media, WILL 580 AM and 90.9 FM HD2 and HD3 Urbana. Broadcasting from Campbell Hall for Public Telecommunication, thanks to a generous gift from Robert and Alice Campbell. I'm Tom Rogers. Good afternoon. It's the Afternoon Magazine beginning now. Jason Croft is our technical director. Coming up in the 1 o'clock hour, we'll talk in an archived interview with Hank Stuver, the author of a book called Tinsel, A Search for America's Christmas Present. He spoke about the Christmas season from the vantage point of a Texas suburb. That's coming up in the 1 o'clock hour. And at 12:40, you'll be able to get a forecast for whatever you're going to be doing or across this holiday weekend, whether it be traveling or otherwise. AM 580's Mike Solo will be in with the Talk to the Meteorologist segment coming in at 12:40 this afternoon. You'll be